Welcome to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks with expert advice from Jim Lang, Pittsburgh-based CPA, attorney, and retirement and estate planning expert. Jim is also the author of Retire Secure, Pay Taxes Later. To find out more about his book, his practice, Lang Financial Group, and how to secure Jim as a speaker for your next event, visit his website at paytaxeslater.com. Now, get ready to talk smart money.
Welcome to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. We are talking smart money. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. I'm Hannah Haytainen-Kay, joining Jim Lang, nationally recognized IRA, 401k, and Roth IRA conversion expert. Jim is the author of the bestseller, Retire Secure, with testimonials from Larry King, Charles Schwab, Jane Bryant Quinn, Ed Slott, and 60 other financial professionals. Tonight, we're excited to have a special guest, John Bledsoe, who has more than 20 years' experience in the financial services business. John is a highly sought-after speaker for attorneys, financial advisors, CPAs, and general audiences. He serves as a consultant to several of the largest securities and insurance companies in the nation and has written over 1,000 financial articles for newspapers and magazines and has authored four books, Rock Solid Estate Planning, Texas Living Trust, Roth to Riches, and his newest book, The Gospel of Roth. John, we want to welcome you tonight.
Thank you.
And I actually want to throw in a little addition to the introduction. John is one of the long time, I'm talking all the way back to 1998, Roth IRA conversion experts. He wrote a great book and a great article. In fact, I even still have his article on my website. I thought it was so good. I called John in 1998. I said, John, this is a terrific article. Can I put it on my website and send it to my clients? And he agreed. And then just recently, when he was working on the book, he consulted with me, and I thought, man, this is just fabulous information that I want to bring to our listeners.
I also wanted to add that with the new book, Roth, it has been said that everyone who has an IRA or retirement plan should read this book. You will learn how to create up to 40% more in spendable after-tax dollars by maximizing the new Roth IRA rules to your advantage. The Roth conversion option is the only way to go. So what we're going to talk about tonight, let's start off with just, I wanted to ask you, I'm sorry.
I'll tell you what I want to do. I want to give people the really good stuff first. what do you think about that, John? You think we should?
I think that's a great idea.
All right. First of all, as a little caveat, you know, before the show, we always have a little disclaimer. You know, these opinions are not the opinions of the station or even of mine. And usually I just let that go. Well, you have, I think, a fascinating idea that is the theme of your book, or at least it's the way you start. And it is an idea that I'm familiar with because I actually wrote an article on it. And I think it's a brilliant idea, but it's very aggressive. So I am going to tell people you really have to do this at your peril. So I'll say disclaimer, disclaimer, disclaimer. But I do want to get right into what I think is just a really unique, very aggressive, potentially enormously profitable idea for our listeners. John, do you want to set up the scenario of, let's say somebody has, for discussion's sake, $500,000 in their traditional IRA or their traditional retirement plan, and the basis of your idea in terms of splitting it up for the potential recharacterization?
Absolutely. First of all, and it's obvious you passed the litmus test, Jim, of being a lawyer by doing the disclaimer, and that is absolutely appropriate. First of all, so many people have read about the conversion opportunities beginning in 2010. Of course, the tax law has changed, and beginning in 2010, no longer are there any restrictions to people being able to convert from a regular IRA to a Roth IRA. Regular IRAs, as most people know, are tax deferred. You get a tax deduction when you put the money in, or if money comes from a qualified plan, you get a tax deduction for it. And when you pull the money out of that IRA or retirement plan, of course, taxes are then due on the larger amount as it's pulled out. Conversely, the new Roth IRA that's now almost 13 years old is tax-free. The money that is in a Roth IRA grows tax-free. When you pull the money out, there's no income tax, but the conversion of a regular IRA to a Roth IRA triggers that tax, and you have to pay taxes upon the conversion or shortly later, as you'll learn. So many people, so many articles and advisors have talked about you should run all these very complicated numbers and then decide whether or not you should convert to a Roth IRA or whether or not a Roth IRA is right for you, and I think that's dead wrong, Jim. I think the approach should be what I call the Roth conversion option. Essentially, I believe that everyone should convert from a regular IRA to a Roth IRA and take the option because you have the ability to undo it without any cost or penalty to you after a period of what appears to be an enormous length of time. You actually have, if you converted in 2010, you have until October the 15th or shortly thereafter of 2011. Some, if you converted on the first day of the new year, which first working day is going to be January the 4th of 2010, right around the corner, you would actually have from then until October the 17th, because the 15th falls on a weekend, of 2011, that's 651 days. And so, for example, with your $500,000 IRA, if you converted that to a Roth IRA, you would be able to watch that and watch the conditions as well of the tax law changes and other things that Congress has in store for us. Many surprises, I think, are going to be a little negative, perhaps, with taxation, making the Roth conversion all the more powerful. So I believe it's a very important opportunity, and I believe numbers should be run, but I think the conversion option needs to be taken in advance of those numbers because you don't know what the account value is going to be on the day you go firm on it until much, much later, a year and 10.5 months.
All right. Now, I want our listeners to really understand what he is saying. And by the way, this is an area where John and I respectfully disagree. But what he is saying is, since you can, the technical word is recharacterize, I like to just call it unconvert. He's saying that since you have the ability to unconvert your Roth IRA conversion, that if you make a Roth IRA conversion, let's say in 2010, and John's point is let's do it as soon as possible, that you can decide later on, depending on the tax laws and probably more importantly, depending on how the investment does, that you could recharacterize or undo the Roth IRA conversion. So what John, and he's a little bit of a lone wolf here, but it's a very interesting idea, is saying is to convert all your IRAs and retirement plans and then to determine either later in the year or possibly even up till October 15th of 2011 to decide which ones you're going to keep and which ones you're not. And John, I don't think that we have talked about separating your IRAs into a number of IRAs.
Right. Would you like for me to speak to that now?
Well, yeah, because that's part of, that's critical to the whole strategy.
Absolutely.
If you don't do that, then we're nowhere.
So let's say that you have, as your example, $500,000, and it could be any amount of money, but understand if it's proportionally $500,000 and you had five different mutual fund investments, each exactly equaling $100,000, then what you would do on January the 4th of 2010 is you would convert your one IRA worth $500,000 by mutual fund into five different Roth IRA conversion accounts. For simplicity, you might call them Roth IRA 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, respectively. And what that does, assuming that mutual funds and other asset classes move differently up and down depending upon their specific submarkets and asset classes, et cetera, then that would give you an opportunity with them being separated out like that, Jim. Of course, you're an expert on this as well. Then if Roth IRA 1 goes up by 30% and Roth IRA 2 goes down by 30%, you don't have to mix the two together. You can unconvert. You certainly wouldn't want to pay on a $100,000 IRA that was converted that dropped down to $70,000. You'd want to perhaps do it again a later year. You wouldn't want to have to pay taxes on $100,000 when it's already dropped to $70,000. However, you have the advantage of, to the extent that any of these accounts go up during this long period of 1 year, 10.5 months, if they go up, you then have the extra analysis and advantage of understanding that you might be able to convert an asset that you already know has gone up from $100,000 to $130,000 to a tax-free environment forever and only pay the taxes as if it were worth $100,000. It's like watching a football game on a DVR and watching it after the fact and getting your buddy to bet on the game against you when you already know the outcome. You have all of the options by doing this.
I love that analogy. I've never heard that before, but that's pretty good.
And we're not watching many of those games, by the way. I'm calling, by way of other disclaimer, Jim, I'm calling from Dallas, Texas, and we consider our football season to be in bad shape here at this point. So we're not rewatching any of those games right now.
Well, I don't want to say anything bad about the Cowboys, being from Pittsburgh myself, but I do think that you guys capitalized on something that is false advertising, and that is there is no truth to Dallas being America's team. It is statistically proven that all through the country there are Steeler bars, and the way I would define America's team is who has the most supporters, not just in the city that the team is in, but all throughout the country. And I think that Pittsburgh really has you there.
So I think you may be right.
In fact, there's Steeler bars all over the country, but I won't hold it against you.
And Steeler towels all over Texas as well.
Well, that's good. So, by the way, we have used this strategy in the past, and it has worked out very well. So, and the key to, if you are going to do this strategy, the key to, see, the problem is, if let's just say for discussion's sake that you really want to end up converting 100,000. And you do John's idea, which is convert everything. And let's say you just did it in one account. So now you have a $5,000 Roth IRA conversion that, let's say, consists of five different mutual funds, and two of them went up and two of them went down and one of them broke even. And what you might really want to do is keep one or two of them. If they're all mushed together in one account, then you're really going to have nowhere near the flexibility that you're going to have if you use John's idea of separating the accounts, and presumably accounts with what's called negative correlation, meaning that when one goes up, the other one tends to go down, and when one goes down, the other one tends to go up. And that way you get the greatest divergence of results. And the idea is the losers, that is the ones that don't do well, they get reconverted or recharacterized to regular IRAs, and the ones that do well, you keep. And so if you, let's say you do, even just keep it real simple, two $100,000 accounts, and one does well, you're really happy because a year and 10 months later, you're up 30%, so you only paid taxes on $100,000 and your Roth is $130,000. And then let's say it goes down, so now you'd be very unhappy if you would have to pay tax on $100,000 and the Roth is only worth $70,000. So with John's strategy, you're getting the best of both. That is, you are separating the IRAs and then deciding later on, you know, just like John said, like after you watch the video or the DVD and then you bet your friend, it's 20/20 hindsight.
Go ahead.
So I think that is a really good idea. Now, to be fair, though, we have to talk about, it really is aggressive, and I know that's how you start your book, and I like your tone because I, of course, write and sound more like a cautious attorney, and you're saying everybody should do it right now.
Right. And
that's the part that's a little bit hard for me to take. But I think that we should talk about a few of the risks of doing this, because I don't think either one of us are trying to sell our ideas, so to speak. We're just trying to provide good information for our readers. So I have one or two ideas of why it might not work out so well, but I thought maybe I'm asking you to say some of the weaknesses of this plan, but I thought I'd throw that out to you, and then I'll chirp in with one or two of the things that I might be thinking. Or do you think it's just so strong that that there's no response to that?
I think actually it's very strong, even though it's counterintuitive, and that is that we have, even in a best-case scenario for the strategy, we understand that people have to make smart financial decisions. And when you fill up your car with gasoline, you have the risk, if you put the wrong type of fuel in, if you put diesel into your gasoline car, it can wreak great damage. You have to take great care of your investments and your retirement accounts. But I believe that the strategy is much more dangerous to do the traditional strategy. And by the way, I'm no longer a voice crying in the wilderness. I even see large magazines and newspapers as recently as this weekend in the New York Times talking about the advantage of having the do-over or the recharacterization or being able to unconvert, as you so well put it. And so even if a person knows for sure in that $500,000 example, you only want to convert $100,000, you only think that you want to convert $100,000, and you have $500,000 available in retirement accounts, by doing my strategy, what you've actually done is you're able to pick the one that has hit the peak, the one that has done the best during that period, therefore saving the maximum amount of taxes and getting the maximum amount tax-free. I think it's high risk to do it the other way, Jim.
Well, that's an interesting perspective, and you are right. There are some more of the popular IRA and Roth IRA experts on board. I think that Bob Keebler is actually talking about a similar type strategy.
Absolutely.
To what you're saying. Now, to be fair, the obvious potential problem, and hopefully you're assuming nobody would be this, I was about to use the word stupid, but that's probably not the right word. Let's say this careless, is to do the conversion and then forget about it and miss the deadline for recharacterizing, and all of a sudden you have a tax liability for $500,000 worth of income compared to $100,000 worth of income, which is what you were planning on paying originally.
Absolutely. So, if you miss the filing dates of your federal tax returns, there are large penalties associated with that. You have to watch it as you go along, but you really only have to watch it for one important date. And I suggest that everybody put it on the calendar, actually a checkpoint to watch it, which would be naturally December the 1st of 2010, of this next year. And so clearly you have to watch those dates, but we have to be careful with a lot of things, including beneficiary designations. And these IRAs can be very, very devastating if people are not careful. And so care is definitely in order, and I don't take those cautions lightly. I just think that in the examples that we'll use, in all the examples that I've read, it's much better to look back and say, I'm so glad I have these options, as opposed to not doing and saying, oh my goodness, I don't have the option because I didn't do what that fellow told me to do.
Well, you know, John, I love flexibility in retirement and estate planning, and the whole basis of Lang's Cascading Beneficiary Plan is not to fix in stone what's going to happen, but rather defer until after the first death. That is, if the husband and wife are married and, let's say, have a couple kids, and let's say you're obvious choices are to who you're going to leave it to is number one, your spouse, number two, your B trust, number three, your kids, and number four, your grandkids. I advocate a strategy of deciding later. And in effect, what you're saying is do the Roths now and then decide later which ones you're really going to keep.
Absolutely. Very similar to your strategy, which, by the way, you are way ahead of the game on that.
Yeah, I was promoting that back in 1998. Back when you wrote the 10 myths of Roth IRA conversions, which I still think that really applies today.
I think so. The difference is I agreed with you immediately.
Okay, that's fair enough. Well, let me ask you this. This is one of those things that sound too good to be true. Do we have to worry about the IRS saying, hey, look, you know, the reason we originally let people recharacterize was because, let's say it's, you know, before year end, you think your income's going to be $90,000, and you make a Roth IRA conversion, and then you get a K-1, or you get a W-2, or you get a 1099, and your income, as it turns out, or you get a some capital gain distributions that you didn't know was coming, and all of a sudden your income's 110, so your income now will not allow you to make a Roth IRA conversion.
Correct.
And I think that the reason why the IRS allowed you to recharacterize was, well, it's now the following year when you found out it doesn't work, so they let you undo it. I don't think that they were ever thinking, hey, let's give these tax experts a fantastic loophole to gain just hundreds of thousands of dollars of value by having the ability to convert and then recharacterize.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. Most of these things happen, and they have unintended results. And remember, again, we're talking about Congress and the IRS, so you're taking a great leap forward when you say they were thinking at all.
Well,
but when you recognize that they had an interest in people converting from regular IRAs to Roth IRAs, and it's been in the law for several years with the ability for people to do it without any restrictions beginning January the 1st of 2010. And the reason for that, Jim, I think it's important for the listener to understand, it's the reason is the government likes the idea of people converting, even though they'll have many, many more dollars in most cases in the future because of the Roth IRA conversion. They love the idea of people converting in 2010. Why? Because they get the money sooner. As a matter of fact, the government, it reminds me, and I don't know how you were brought up, but when I was growing up, one of my favorite stores, our fancy store that my mom took me to, was called Kmart. And I remember they had a blue light special, and it just make you so excited, whatever they were selling, even if you didn't want it, the fact that they would only sell it for a limited period of time while that rotating blue light was on. Well, the government is doing that in 2010. They're actually trying to market for the second time Roth IRA conversions, this time for everybody. And that's not a temporary rule. That's going to go on forever as the law is written now. But the what that does is that makes it people able to convert. They can convert some in 2010, 2011, 2012, so they don't have to worry about being restricted out again under the current law. But the government said, we'll even give you a special privilege. We'll let you defer the taxes until 2011, until 2012, if you like, at no interest cost. You can do half the conversion added to your income in 2011 and 2012 each year, respectively, if that's your choice. But the unintended result is, obviously, they didn't mean for the window to be that broad for this application. Who knows whether they'll change it or not in future years, but we're 100% safe, in my estimation. I'd like to hear your take on it, from a standpoint of them changing the law this year, saying, no, you can't unconvert. That's the law as it is now. That's the thing that people can do in good faith in January. They can convert and know that they have until October the 17th of 2011 to unconvert. They may not have that wide of window or Roth conversion window ever again. This may be a great opportunity for them to do that. They may actually restrict it until April or different regulations for future years. All the more so why I think they should do it.
Well, that to me is probably, even though I would agree with you it's low probability, although you might think it's zero probability, but that to me is one of the most compelling reasons not to do it. So let's say for discussion's sake that one of these firms run the numbers. And by the way, that's what we do for quite a few people. So when you say, oh, these fancy firms that run the numbers, and I'm thinking, yeah, well, that's us. But let's say that we run the numbers and we determine that the ideal amount to convert is $100,000. And by the way, just to give listeners an idea of the benefits of making a $100,000 conversion, let's say for discussion's sake you're 65 years old, you make a $100,000 conversion, you pay the taxes from outside the IRA. 20 years later, you, not your heirs, not your kids, not your grandkids, but you are $40,000 better off, by my numbers. Then let's say you die and you leave the money to your kids. Your kids will be better off by $700,000, and the other possibility is you leave the money to your grandkids and they'll be better off by $8.6 million. And now we're actually talking about, with John's strategy, of enhancing that so that the benefits could even be higher. And I'm not going to go through all the assumptions. But let me just go back to say that my fear with your strategy, that frankly, with all due respect, I would characterize as very aggressive, although I wrote an article talking about it myself, so I can't really knock it, is what happens if the right number is $100,000, you convert, you do what you say, separate it into five different accounts, you convert all of them, and then the IRS says, hey, you know, we were too generous with the ability to allow people to recharacterize, we're either going to change the deadline, or that they just say, hey, guess what, you can't recharacterize.
I think that'd be unprecedented.
Well,
I think that, it certainly could happen, but I think the likelihood, if we want to go into that, could be much, much greater on other bad things happening as well. So I think that's because of the fact that these types of rules with regard to retirement accounts. It reminds me, years ago, people were afraid to put money into retirement plans because they thought the government would change the rules in the future when they pulled the money out, and they thought it was some grand conspiracy. In reality, everyone, as you pointed out in your example, they did better by doing the tax deductions, putting the money away, letting the money grow tax deferred, and then ultimately converting to a Roth IRA if they were able to. Those numbers are astronomical. So people do have to take some leap of faith, but this is not a very big one here because the fact of the matter could be significantly worse. The downside could be by you not having taken advantage of this ability, as it's written in the IRS publications and all the instructions for IRAs, that you have until October the 15th, actually the 17th again because it's a weekend, of 2011 to unconvert anything or recharacterize anything that you converted in 2010, you have that option. And the reality is that what you may discover in 2010, and many people have discovered it now, income taxes are set to go up in 2011. Income taxes are going to go up from a federal level of 35% to 39.6, but it doesn't have to stop there. Announced rates for 2011 may end up being 45%.
Well, there's a whole lot of areas that I wanted to comment on that, but I think it is time for a break.
Very good.
You're listening to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. We'll be right back with guest John Bledsoe.
The Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, featuring the expert advice of Pittsburgh-based CPA attorney Jim Lang. More coming up on KQV AM 1410. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all of your financial needs, turn to Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, 412-521-2732. Let's talk more smart money.
This is Hannah Haytain and Kay. We're talking smart money with Jim Lang and John Bledsoe.
John, I wanted to get back to the point about potentially a negative tax law that could have a negative impact on your strategy. Probably the best argument that it won't happen is that they can always change the tax law in the future, but you would think that somebody who is already in the system, that is somebody who has already made the Roth IRA conversion when there is a given set of laws, would actually be grandfathered. And that's probably an argument for your strategy of doing all of it early. So if they do make a change in the law, presumably it would be done after January 2010, and if your conversion is already done, that you would be grandfathered.
Right, I agree with that.
Yeah, so I think that is good. Now, there's also some other strategies. I was actually talking with Barry Picker the other day, who is another Roth IRA expert, and he's been on the show. And he says, well, what he kind of likes is doing a portion of it early in the year, but he also says that he wants to reserve some in case it goes down during the year itself. So let's say you do a Roth IRA conversion in 2010, and one of the accounts goes down, he's actually suggesting, well, maybe you want to recharacterize some of that in 2010, that is, not wait for 2011, and then wait the requisite period, or have other IRAs, traditional IRAs that you haven't converted, to convert then. And that to me is an interesting strategy also.
Correct. And I must say, the idea of this, of the January 4th of 2010, or when anyone hears about this strategy, they ought to consider converting right away, simply a time value of money calculation, meaning the idea that would be that accounts would be worth more in the future than they were right now. But in reality, accounts can go up and down. The problem with Barry's assessment of this is that, and we ran literally hundreds of thousands of numbers through our models with how investment performance has tracked in the past. The low date of the year is more often than not, if someone invests in stocks or even bonds, is often not the first day of the year. It can be somewhere else within the year would mark the low point of that investment. The reality is that nobody knows when that is. They would be very, very wealthy if they did, and I certainly would take advice from them. Well, I don't think they would need advice from anyone else. If they could pick the low of the year, that would be the day to buy everything. And the reality is, though, that we don't know when the low point is, and we don't know which accounts are going to go up or down. And so my strategy, even if somebody has CDs, is that the accounts, by preserving the January date on the conversion of 2010 and waiting, they have more options. In reality, though, you might look back at with a alternate strategy. If you had some powder that was dry and you could convert, if it went even lower during the year, if it was important for you to convert some in 2010, then that alternatively might work out better. Actually, though, 4 out of 5 times, with the partial conversion strategy, it was better to convert them all on January the 5th with the anticipation that you only wanted to ultimately convert 100 or 200,000 out of a $500,000 account.
Well, again, and to me, it's a really compelling, interesting idea that intuitively I like, but I'm just a little bit too conservative, maybe just brought up that way. But and I do sometimes like having some traditional IRA around that we could potentially convert again. But by the way, in either case, whether you're attracted to John's strategy, whether you say, hey, that's too aggressive, I do think, and I maybe I'll ask you this too, John, that people really should be looking hard at whether they should be making a Roth IRA conversion. And before we even get to 2010, it's still 2009. And let's say that, for discussion's sake, that you are a senior, that is, you're over 70, you have not taken your minimum required distribution for 2009 yet, and you don't intend to because the government said you don't have to take a minimum required distribution in 2009. This is likely to be the lowest income year that you have ever had. And to me, I wouldn't be, if I was in that situation, that is, I was 70 or older, I was in a low income because I don't have a minimum required distribution, I would be thinking about doing a conversion in 2009. And if I'm over $100,000, then even without the MRD, then I'm very interested in 2010. So, John, would you say it's fair that whether you are using your aggressive strategy or even, let's say, more conservative strategies, that a lot of people, maybe not everybody, but a lot of people, certainly the majority of IRA and retirement plan owners, should at least be thinking about a Roth IRA conversion plan?
Yes, I agree with you. If your income is going to be less than $100,000 in modified adjusted gross income, which essentially is your adjusted gross income with a couple of additions, subtractions, then converting in 2009 is even better, particularly perhaps even bridging some of those because of the if you're over 70 and a half, you don't have for the first time in history any of these mandatory distributions in 2009. And again, to follow the conspiracy theory, I have no fear that the IRS is going to make you make a distribution in arrears for 2009. We pretty much accept that as settled law. And so, great, you had to make no distribution for 2009. Your income may thus be lower than it would have normally been. I think the strategy for making large conversions in several different asset classes in 2009 is very, very winning. And I would say definitely do that if your income is lower than the $100,000.
And there you can either use, let's say, my more conservative strategy of determining what is the appropriate amount to convert and convert that, or your more aggressive strategy, you could do the same thing again. You could take all your accounts, split them into 5 or 10 different IRAs, convert all of them to Roth IRAs, and basically just use the same strategy that you're recommending. And by the way, I don't think that we have mentioned that is the premise of your book, and we should probably give listeners a chance to get the book, which by the way is, you know, I think you just did a great job on it. I've always liked your writing, and you are the most un-Philadelphia attorney like writer that I know. You just have.
Well, I take that as high praise. Thank you.
And that's actually the way it is meant. But why don't you tell listeners how they can get the book and where they should go to get it? Which by the way, I haven't seen the official book, but I think I've, you know, you have sent me email files.
I haven't seen the official book either. I've seen the galleys, and the book is actually shipping out tomorrow afternoon. It will be available in fine bookstores everywhere, including Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble, and at a coming soon to a retailer near you. It's also available if anyone listening would like to get a copy early. The book, by the way, is priced at $29.95. It's 256 pages, and it has a lot of charts and graphs and illustrations about Roth IRAs and regular IRAs and a simple English explanation of all the rules and what to consider. It's available on a website that I have called gospelofroth.com, gospelofroth.com, and you're able to buy the book there and get it a week or two sooner than Amazon or Barnes & Noble have it.
Now, wouldn't another advantage of that being that you might send out an occasional newsletter of an update?
Absolutely, absolutely. We are doing newsletters and blogs and keeping up with the occasional changes in both the tax law and the environment, and all that will be added and is added monthly. We do a monthly newsletter via email.
And that might be better for the listeners to do that rather than to go to Amazon, where you're not going to know their contact information.
Absolutely. And if anyone wants on the list, they can do that. Or my email is john@johnbledsoe.com, john@johnbledsoe.com. Now, you're giving your book away at your seminar. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. I am.
That is amazing. Obviously, if Larry King gives it an endorsement, that's... he's a lot better known than these IRA experts, but it's a great, great, great book, and I had to buy my first copy off of Amazon's, Jim, so I should have come to your workshop.
Well, you could have, but I think the idea here is I'm interested in working with people that come to the workshop, and it is in my interest and their interest that they be educated, and that's an extra incentive, and a lot of times what people will do is they will thumb through the table of contents and read what is most relevant for them, and then when they come in to see me, they have one leg up. On the other hand, frankly, most people don't, and they just come in and we take it from scratch. You know, we have spent really most of the show talking about this idea, and there we have about 20 other questions that we wanted to get to, John.
Yeah, Jim, let me jump in here. John, let me ask you a couple questions. First of all, can a non-deductible IRA be converted to a Roth IRA?
Yes. Yes, they can. As a matter of fact, non-deductible IRAs are a special type of IRA. If you're not able to deduct an IRA, as a matter of fact, everyone, regardless of whether or not you have a retirement plan at work or even if your income is very, very high, everyone can convert can contribute either $5,000 or $6,000 to a so-called non-deductible IRA. And beginning next year, you'll be able to. And by the way, that line is if you're 50 or more, Hannah, you can convert, you can contribute $6,000. Or if you're below age 50, you can do $5,000 to a non-deductible. And there's nothing to say that beginning next year, you can't immediately convert that to a Roth IRA. So what happens then, if you had $5,000 in a non-deductible IRA and that was converted to a Roth IRA, that $5,000 would be your basis. That'd be what you didn't get a tax deduction, that's your after-tax dollar contribution. Then that $5,000 grows as if you had been able to contribute to a Roth IRA all along. So there's a tremendous advantage to if you have a large amount of your IRA accounts that are in non-deductible IRAs. The sooner that you do that, the math is even greater. The math that Jim gave was astronomical. I mean, just converting $100,000 to a Roth IRA, it's even greater if you have non-deductible IRAs to convert them sooner instead of later.
Right. Now, I would add two things to that. The non-deductible IRAs are for people who make too much money to convert to make a contribution to a Roth IRA. All right, the other thing that I would say, and I think, what is that, $166,000 if you're married, something like that?
Yes.
So the other thing that I would say that's very interesting about a non-deductible IRA, and I'm not going to have time to go through this in detail, a non-deductible IRA where you put money into a retirement plan, you don't get a tax deduction, the money grows income tax deferred, and then when you take it out, the distributions are pro rata. That is, some of it is a return of your capital that you've already paid tax on, and some of it is the gain, which that portion you'll have to pay. That is conceptually similar to after-tax dollars inside your IRA, inside your company retirement plan. So let's say, for discussion's sake, that the company retirement plan will let you put in, based on your income, $30,000 or $40,000, but the IRS would only allow you to deduct, well, now $22,000, but before much less. So a lot of people, particularly high-income earners, have non-deductible portions of, or after-tax dollars inside their retirement plan. There is a very cool method where we can isolate that and avoid the pro rata rules. Now, I know I'm jumping, and actually end up making a Roth IRA conversion of a portion of that money without having to pay the tax.
Right.
And I hate to do this to listeners. And by the way, by pure coincidence, that is something that I cover in my workshop. But it is a very cool thing, and the benefits are tremendous because you don't even have to pay the tax. Even, John, the best of your strategy, you're still going to have to pay some tax to the IRS. With one of the strategies that I have for the non-deductible IRAs and money in the after-tax dollars in the retirement plans, people could potentially make a Roth IRA conversion without having to pay the tax. And again, one caveat, you have to jump through a number of hoops to do that, but it can be very worthwhile.
Sometimes jumping through these hoops make you a lot of money.
I have another question for you, John. Can a beneficiary roll over an inherited Roth IRA to his or her own name?
A beneficiary can only roll over a Roth IRA if they're the spouse. So like regular IRAs, if a account holder dies, his or her spouse can then take the money and convert that or rename that account into his or her own name. And the advantage of that is that Roth IRAs, unlike regular IRAs, have no mandatory lifetime distributions. Therefore, 70.5 is no big deal to a person who has the Roth IRAs only, because they don't ever have to take the money out during their lifetime. However, if their children or grandchildren or other beneficiaries, then, and only then, after the account holder has died and the account has been inherited by these children or grandchildren or other people, non-spouses, then they must begin to withdraw the Roth IRA, but they don't have to take it out immediately. They take it out over their life expectancy. So it's a long enjoyment of these tax-free distributions that are tax-free even after you inherit the IRA as a Roth IRA, and you can take them very, very slowly relative to taking it out all at once.
And I am a great fan of that. In the traditional IRA world, it is called the stretch IRA, or the stretch Roth IRA. And I actually, in my estate planning, built a series of disclaimers. You can determine after somebody dies whether the money should go to a spouse, potentially a B-trust that I probably wouldn't be a big fan of for Roth IRAs.
A big option here, Jim, is, in my opinion, people ask, well, what if I die after I've done the Bledsoe strategy or the Roth conversion option? What if I die during that period? And, you know, can my heirs unconvert it? The answer again is yes. If a person has IRAs, the executor, the heirs, cannot make a conversion after the fact, after somebody died, even if they'd intended to do it. However, if they use my strategy on the Roth conversion option, they're able to unconvert after a person's death all the way up to that October 17th of 2011 date for 2010 conversions. They're able to do that without be able to pick and choose just as if the person was alive. And again, if a person inherits a regular IRA versus a Roth IRA, It's significantly more money. Over a beneficiary's age 50, it actually could end up being as much as 20% even more money because of the tax laws by inheriting a Roth IRA versus a regular IRA.
Okay, John, we're going to have to take a short break. We'll be right back with our guest, John Bledsoe, on the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks.
The Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks, featuring the expert advice of Pittsburgh-based CPA attorney Jim Lang. More coming up on KQV AM 1410. The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all of your financial needs, turn to Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, 412-521-2732. Let's talk more smart money.
This is Hannah Hayton and Kay. We're talking smart money with Jim Lang and John Bledsoe.
Jim, I want to give a quick plug for you. I have visited YouTube normally to watch musicians and other artists, and you have several brief explanations about IRAs on YouTube. And if anyone wanted to get in advance of buying your DVD a flavor for how well you explain these subjects using the chalkboard and the graphics, it's great. They can just type in the search engine either Roth IRA, you'll be at the top, or Roth conversion, or Jim Lang. And I think that visually it's very, very helpful, just like people that attend your workshop, to see you in action and how you've explained this so well to people.
Well, I appreciate it. And plus, I believe I sent you a copy of that workshop.
You did indeed. And I have not yet watched it, but I have seen the snippets on YouTube. I intend to watch the whole thing as soon as I get some popcorn.
Okay, very good.
John, let me give you a scenario. Let's say someone has a large regular IRA and the income tax on the Roth conversion will cost them almost $300,000. How long will they have to live before they break even on this $300,000 expense?
Great question. And of course, what's being asked here is that if there's $300,000 that I've got to pay in income tax now, then I'm $300,000 poorer because I've converted my regular IRA to a Roth IRA, and now I've got $300,000 of additional tax. That's a loss. How long will it take to make it up? And the answer is, it's made up immediately. It is not a loss. The $300,000 categorically that you owe on your IRA, let's say at a 30% average rate at a $1 million IRA conversion, that $300,000 is a debt. It's just like you had a debt on your home mortgage, or you had a debt in your business that you've personally guaranteed. You've got a debt against every dollar in your retirement account and your IRA to the U.S. government. And the government's a really bad partner because they want the money when it's the highest, after somebody's 70 and a half, and they'll make you start taking the money out after age 70 and a half. So for most people, the answer is there is no crossover. They're ahead. They actually have more money, as counterintuitive as that may appear, by converting and paying the taxes sooner instead of later.
And I would agree with John, and that's a huge misnomer. And one of the results of thinking, oh, it's going to take a long time to break even, is that older IRA and retirement plan owners are hesitant to make a Roth IRA conversion. But I would agree with John. I put it in a slightly different way. I would say if you have $1 million in your IRA and you have $300,000, yes, I would agree that you have $1.3 million total. But if you want to buy goods or services, you would have to cash in your IRA, pay taxes of $300,000, so you really only have $1 million of purchasing power. And likewise, if you make a Roth IRA conversion, you write a check to the IRS for $300,000, you now have $1 million Roth IRA, and if you go to cash that in the next day, you still have $1 million of purchasing power, which is why I agree with John in that, yes, your break-even period, unless you change tax brackets, and we're not going to have time to get into that, is literally going to be day one. And I think it's really important for seniors to understand that we're looking for the most purchasing power, not just the most dollars. And if you take into consideration the fact that the money's going to grow income tax-free, and if you also take into consideration, even if it didn't grow a dime, that the income tax rates are almost inevitably going to go up, that this is really going to be a good deal.
I agree.
All righty. We don't have much time left, but there was one thing that I do wanted to get to. All right, and we have 2 minutes, so we're we're going against the rules, but I'm going to throw out a question to you. What is the order that you like to spend money? So let's say that a retiree has some after-tax dollars, they have some IRA dollars, and they have some Roth IRA dollars, which presumably is what most of our clients who are interested in these strategies will end up with. What do you like to spend? And let's assume that they're retired and their Social Security and pension can't pay their expenses.
Yeah.
Which pot do you like to go into first?
Well, the last, let me take that in reverse order very quickly. The last money one should ever spend if they have Roth IRAs converted or Roth IRAs contributed is the Roth IRA. That's tax-free forever money that you don't have to take out. That's the last money you would ever touch. And then you have to run the analysis as to whether or not if you've got CDs or other money that's saved that doesn't trigger a tax, maybe that money first and then the IRA money because of the enjoyment of that deferral or still the potential to convert that to a Roth IRA second. And then lastly and finally, burn that most precious asset, the tax-free forever during your lifetime Roth IRA.
And by the way, I would agree with that. And I want to thank you so much, John, but unfortunately, we are just about out of time.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it, and keep up the good work, Jim.
Thanks so much, John, and I want to thank our listeners for joining us. This is Hannah Haytainen Kay with the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. Please join us on January 13th when Jim will talk about Roth IRA conversions with Steve Komen, CPA, certified estate planner, and co-author of many Roth IRA articles.
Thanks for listening to the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. Portions of the audio that you just heard will be posted online at retiresecure.com. You can also find a list of upcoming events and topics at retiresecure.com. To seek Jim's advice personally or to speak to a member of his dedicated staff at Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill, call 412-521-2732. Join us again in 2 weeks when we talk more smart money.